A very pleasant good morning to you. This is live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Okanagan Country Radio. It's 8:05. I'm your host, Tracy Ellis, with the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. You can email me with your questions. My email is tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. That's T-R-A-C-Y-E-L-L-I-S at leg.wa.gov. Or give us a call, 509-826-0100. You can ask your question that way, 509-826-0100. Wolves are coming to Olympia. Well, I don't think they'll actually come to testify. That would be interesting. But there are a couple of wolf bills. You both have wolf bills as well that you're sponsoring in the House, Representatives Engel and Abel. Talk about the latest. Talk about the hearings that are coming up and the ability for people to testify in those hearings.
Yeah, so good morning. So good news on our wolf bills. Andrew and I both have a couple of bills that have been introduced and have been sent on to the House Agriculture Committee. There are hearings on those bills this upcoming Wednesday, so day after tomorrow, starting at 8 a.m. And the bills do a couple of things. I'll talk about my bill, and Andrew can talk about his, but mine provides for localized management of the wolves at the county level if there's a certain number of wolves present both within the county and statewide. We think this is a good tailored approach to appropriate wolf management, and it's really important that people testify. It's critically important that we hear people's thoughts and feelings regarding these bills, and there's an easy way to do it. If you go onto the legislative website and type in HB 1442, it will bring up the bill, and there's a link there where you can click to sign in to testify either remotely, if people are able to come here to Olympia. I know it's a long ways, but if they're able to do it, testify in person, that'd be wonderful. But you can also press a button to provide your position pro or con without actually testifying. So it's a great way to let people know your thoughts on this bill.
Yes, Hunter's exactly right, and we do need people to sign in support of the bill. It's important that the other members of the committee see that there's lots of people in our district who support this bill. Currently, it looks like we're getting hundreds of people signing in from the west side of the state who want to control how the wolves are managed in our backyards, and we want to show them that we feel differently. I think there's also some misunderstanding about what these bills do. I know for my bill, it doesn't remove the wolves from the endangered species list. It just reduces them from endangered, which I think those of us who live in Northeast Washington know that wolves are in no danger. They're not endangered. Honestly, they're not even sensitive, but my bill drops them to sensitive. So they're still protected under the Endangered Species Act. The Fish and Wildlife Department would have more flexibility with how they manage the wolves, but the people themselves still won't have a lot of flexibility on their own without approval from the agency. So it really doesn't go as far as it should, but it's a step in the right direction, and it's reflecting reality, it's reflecting the science, and it's very offensive to us when these wolves are listed as endangered when actually they're more of a danger to the species around them than they are. So yes, you can testify, sign in, support, talk to your friends, encourage them to do the same.
And there is a model for doing exactly what these types of bills are trying to do, and that is the successful management of the wolves by the Caldwell Confederated Tribes. They've been doing this for a while, and it's resulting in better management of the wolf population. Again, to Andrew's point, this is not talking about, you know, complete delisting or getting rid of the wolves. It's really just trying to make sure that the rest of the ecosystem is not harmed by an overabundance of wolves in this localized area.
Now, your bill, Representative Abel, is interesting because it gets, once wolves get to a certain point, then it just adds another layer of management, right? Because so the county can come in and say, listen, we're going to step in, we're going to help manage these wolves. So that's basically what it does, is that right?
Well, sort of. Okay. It doesn't add another layer of management. It really replaces the current layer of management.
Okay.
So it's a threshold. If there's a certain number of wolves within the county and statewide, then the wolves will be managed at the county level. And my bill has a process which requires a plan to be developed with all the relevant stakeholders, including invitation to any impacted tribes to develop this plan, to submit the plan then to Fish and Wildlife for implementation, for approval.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really what it does, is it takes the current level of approval from Fish and Wildlife and brings it back to the counties.
Yeah, so it's being controlled locally.
Correct.
By the people who are elected locally. You know, I mean, the county commissions oversee the counties, and that's a really kind of interesting approach. And then Representative Engel, your bill, as you said, I mean, I don't want to say it doesn't do a lot, but it just barely tweaks it a little bit just to get a little bit better management, right? That's kind of what you're looking for?
That's correct. What it really does is it's what's called downlisting. So it doesn't delist. It doesn't take them off the endangered species list, but it downlists from endangered, down past threatened to sensitive, which changes some of the penalties. It changes the threshold by which the agency can make decisions. And so another thing worthy of note for the hearing, it's scheduled for, so the way these hearings work, they schedule for 2 hours. And the hearing could be any time during the 2 hours. Right now it looks like we're going to be having a work session first, which is the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Colville Confederated Tribe will be coming in and kind of giving an overview of the current status of wolves from their points of view before the hearing starts. So there's a good chance the hearing may start closer to 9 o'clock, mm-hmm. but it could be anywhere between that 8 and 10 o'clock window.
Yeah, that's a good point. Sometimes we don't do enough of letting people know how the process works here in Olympia, and that's exactly right. All right. So Representative Abel mentioned the website. That's leg.wa.gov, leg.wa.gov, and you should be able to find the information there. Again, you could type in those bill numbers, which again is
1442
and 1311.
But there's also plenty of opportunities there to search if you don't remember the bill number, and we don't expect you necessarily to remember it. Senator Short, I know the big thing in the Senate this week is the Parental Bill of Rights. I guess it's not actually called the Parental Bill of Rights, but the initiative that passed last year, giving parents, reinforcing parent rights in education. That bill, some Republicans are characterizing it as being under attack by a bill that's in the Senate, a bill that's going to probably come to the Senate floor this week. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, 100%. I mean, it obliterates the initiative that this legislative body overwhelmingly passed and was signed into law. But before I get into that, I want to get into Rep. Engel's wolf bill on the downlisting. You know, there are nuances to it that are going to give Fish and Wildlife more flexibility, and I don't want folks to lose sight of that. I think, especially given, you know, the chronic areas of northeastern Washington that really need a much different strategy, I think actually downlisting would help that. So I just wanted to add that point. But getting back to the bill that's going to be before us on Wednesday, there's so many things that are wrong with it, but the biggest is just really purposefully withholding information from parents in a timely manner. If you think of your child getting sick or needing to be taken out of school facilities, you know, for medical treatment, maybe involved in a fight or got hurt, or, you know, you can think of a bunch of scenarios for you who are parents. I mean, you're going to want that immediate notification. This bill does not do that. The bill the Senate majority Democrats are pushing would not do it. It would say, oh, maybe 40 hours or, you know, whatever works, essentially. I'm paraphrasing. But it's that kind of thing. So really, when your children go to school, you now have, except for education records, that's the only thing the parents are going to have a right to see. And I think it's so offensive to me that the Democrats are using our public education system to get in, you know, right in the middle of a parent-child familial relationship. We know as kids ourselves, our kids growing up, they have challenges throughout their life as they grow and mature. And to take that significant chunk of that away from the parents, not giving parents knowledge of what's going on in their child's school day, even if frankly the family's going through a really difficult time, we all know that both when we were children and our children. There are times that conversations are really difficult, but this bill would get right in the middle of it and say, you know what, those conversations don't have to happen, and we're just not going to let you know. The other pieces that it does, it puts an emergency clause on it, which means that the right of referendum is no longer in play. And I just, for all of the folks, including the prime sponsor of this bill, who, by the way, voted for the initiative before the legislature last year and said that it retained, like, it fully went within our laws, right? There was nothing there that took away any state laws. And now she's saying, well, we just want to make sure, you know, we want to make sure it's in concert with other laws. And I'm like, you know, it's such a thin, actually, it's a very upfront attempt to continue to get in the middle of that relationship. We have a number of amendments that are really designed to highlight all of these issues. We're going to fight it. We're going to fight for parents and their children and their families. That's where the strength of our communities comes from. The strength of society is a really strong familial relationship, good times or bad times. And so we're going to fight to protect that.
There's a companion bill in the House as well. Have you guys seen anything on that yet?
Well, I'm familiar with the companion bill. It has not landed in front of the committees, any of the committees that I am serving on. But so the first time I see it will be on the floor if it gets there. But I just want to echo, you know, what Senator Short said. This is so extremely concerning, this broader effort to really insert the school system in between the relationship between the parents and the children. This goes to a question of whose kids are they? You know, I think for some of our friends on the other side, the answer is they're the school's kids, and that's not true. They're the parents' children. And the legislature affirmed that, and, you know, now there's this effort to really gut the Parental Rights Initiative, and it's extremely disconcerting for me.
This is live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell. If you have a question for us, give us a call. It's 509-826-0100, 509-826-0100, or email me, tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. That's tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. And we do have our first question. It's on House Bill 1504. That bill is related to putting a $25,000 liability for the use of each gun. At least that's what the caller or the person asking the question is concerned about. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so a good question. So this is actually part and parcel of a series of what I view as bad anti-Second Amendment bills that we've seen coming forward this session. This particular one would require an insurance policy for purposes of owning a firearm. And all this really goes to my mind that, you know, this is a core constitutional right articulated in our state constitution, Article 1, Section 24, as well as protected under our U.S. Constitution. And this package of anti-Second Amendment bills really goes far beyond anything that I've seen before in terms of trying to impair that right to keep and bear arms. So this is, you know, one bad example. There are other bad examples that are out there as well. There's a proposal to slap an 11% tax on the sale of firearms and ammunition here in the state of Washington. That's in addition to the sales tax that already exists. There's also a proposal for to require lockbox devices in homes and in vehicles. Now, the problem with that, of course, is that, you know, the criminals aren't going to be doing that. It'll only be the law-abiding citizens that do that. There's also a proposal to ban what they call so-called bulk purchases of firearms and ammunition. This was fascinating because, you know, we heard from folks in our committee, the Civil Rights and Judiciary Committee, that really people can have different definitions of what bulk ammunition comprises. So, for example, we heard from competitive shooters who, you know, their afternoon of practice would fall under this bulk definition, and there's no exception for individuals like that. And then there's also a proposal for a new permit to purchase. In other words, you'd have to have an additional permit to purchase a firearm. This was fascinating because in our committee, we actually introduced an amendment that would say that if your permit to purchase is denied by the state incorrectly, and that you had to go to a court process to secure your permit, that if you prevailed, you would get your attorney's fees paid for. And you can see the Democrats really wrestle with that, because that doesn't seem right that, gosh, you end up having to dip into the kids' college fund or dip into your retirement in order to secure your right to engage in a constitutional right. And they struggled with it and still voted down the amendment. So they said, fine, wipe out your retirement in order to buy a weapon. I just don't think that's right.
I heard somebody say one time, just replace, with all these bills, replace firearm with speech, right? I mean, the amendments they carry the same weight, right? I mean, there's no different amendment. One amendment isn't more important than another in the Constitution, right?
No, you're exactly right. On this so-called restriction on bulk purchases of ammunition, you know, I made the point in our committee, you know, for speech, I'd be like trying to prohibit bulk sentences. Or for freedom of worship, that'd be trying to block bulk prayers. Now, to be clear, I think a legislature needs all the prayers we can get. So, very disconcerting.
My father-in-law would be in trouble during the holidays, because he has bulk prayers sometimes. So again, this is another chance for you to comment. It's interesting. Oftentimes, you get opportunities, like when you call the legislative hotline. I'll give you that number here just a sec to talk to your representatives and your senators. In this particular case, you want to try to reach out to Democrats. And if you know someone who lives in a Democrat district, maybe encourage them to reach out to their representatives and their senators, because obviously, we said it before, if you disagree with what you're hearing here today, your representatives and your senator want to hear that as well. They represent all of you. You know, Democrats, Republicans, just because they're Republicans doesn't mean they don't represent the whole district. So do reach out to your legislators here in Olympia. And that number, I can give you the legislative hotline number real quick. That's 1-800-562-6000. Or the easy way to learn a lot about the legislature is leg.wa.gov. That's leg.wa.gov. Another bill that is getting a hearing, and we've talked about this the last couple of weeks, but it's worth mentioning again, is the rent control bill.
Yes, that rent control bill went through the House, through the housing committee that I sit on, passed out of that committee a week or so ago with one of the Democrats actually voted against it, but they have a 2-seat majority, so they still pass it out of committee. And now it's headed to the Senate, where Senator Short gets to weigh in.
Has it been voted off the floor yet?
It has not gone to the floor
yet.
Okay,
yeah, so not quite yet, but I'm sure they'll bring it there. I have no doubt.
But I believe that they do have a Senate version of it going through right now.
Yes, there is a companion version too. So yeah, that is one of those bills that we're keeping an eye on for you for sure. Anything else, Senator Short? For people who don't know, Senator Short is the Republican floor leader, which means that she's kind of up on everything that's coming to the floor of the Senate. And I know that on Wednesday, the Democrats, and again, we should explain how the process works. The Democrats really control what bills get to the floor. Since they have majorities and supermajorities in both the Senate and the House, they really kind of control everything in some respects. You know, Republicans, you know, do what they can. And Senator Short has always had a good working relationship with the floor leaders, the Democrat floor leaders. So what are some other bills coming to the floor? You know, Wednesday, they're talking about 18 bills coming to the floor of the Senate.
Well, there are a number, and you know, first of all, it's an honor to serve in that position on behalf of my Senate Republican colleagues, but it also is an opportunity for our district. I believe that position has you in so many different conversations, different meetings, and it just offers opportunities to engage on issues, you know, that our folks back home care about. There's a number. So I came in a little late because there was a tad bit of snow out where I live. So I apologize up front for that. I don't have the specific list, but I can tell you, generally, with the exception of some of the bills we've been talking about, generally, they're more, you know, widely supported bills that come to the floor at this time. And I'll tell you what, there's a few of them that have had a lot of no votes that we will either be voting on Wednesday or on Friday, depending on how the committees are working. And it's just, it's been really interesting. I feel like this is a fevered pitch, like a short session. I'm not exactly sure, you know, how many of these bills they're going to put on Washingtonians, but, you know, we stand ready to stand up. I do have a good working relationship with folks, and I do advocate either for or against sometimes not having bills come up. But I want you to know, too, that our leadership team is working with the other side, too, to determine, you know, whether or not they have all the votes they need for bills that we're fighting against. And that's ongoing work. But we're not taking it lightly. We're using every opportunity we can to fight for folks that have a different view than from either Seattle or Olympia.
You're both the Representatives Engel and Abel, freshman representatives. Are you trying to develop relationships with the other side, with Democrats at this point? I mean, every Republican I've ever talked to pretty much says that's essential when you come to Olympia, is to try to develop those relationships so you can get your bills heard and hopefully get them to the floor. What's that process been like for you?
Yeah, so a couple of things. First of all, you're absolutely right. That is essential to getting our work done here in Olympia and being able to effectively advocate for our folks back home, having those relationships with the folks across the aisle, both because they have majorities in both chambers, but also, frankly, because it's the right thing to do.
Right.
If we want to be value-added and positive,
right,
you know, contributors here at the legislature. So there's been a couple of ways to do it, and I'm interested in Andrew's thoughts on this as well. One is all the freshmen go through an orientation process, and that's very practical, nuts and bolts. You know, here's, you know, where your office is going to be, here's where the restrooms are, you know, that sort of thing. Here's how to get a bill onto the floor. And in that process, we get a chance to know the incoming freshmen on the other side. And then since the legislature has started, we have a chance, of course, to work with more senior Democrats on both the committees and sometimes just out there on the floor. And something that I know Andrew and I committed to doing a while ago was trying to reach out to members of the other party and just see if we could set up informal conversations with them and making clear that there's no agenda to the conversation. It's really just a chance to find out a little bit more about them, what they're passionate about. I've engaged in a number of those conversations. They've been really revealing, very interesting, and very helpful for us because I view a huge part of our job as being just educating the rest of our legislators about how different the 7th District is from any other district in the state. Different in a good way, but just really trying to make sure they understand that our needs are probably going to look a little bit different than the needs of, you know, voters maybe in Bellevue or Tumwater or something along those lines.
Yes, it is important, and I would say, for me, starting out, a lot of my new relationships, in addition to, as Representative Abel said, with the orientation where we got to know, I think there was about 6 new Democrats, so we got to know them relatively well over about 4 or 5 days of orientation. But on the Agriculture Committee that I serve on, it's somewhat of a bipartisan committee. We don't sit on left and right sides of the dais, and so we're interspersed, and there's opportunities for engagement, and a lot of those topics are not as polarizing, so that's been a great place to start building relationships with the Democrats there. Also, some of the more moderate Democrats do sit on that committee. But also, we, other places as well, I've been enjoying getting to know them, and I've found that, as is the case, most people, regardless of how they vote, are friendly and have good intentions, and maybe just have a different worldview, a different point of view, different experiences that determines how they think and act.
One thing I'll say also is there is at least one meeting that I've been to regularly so far in my time in the legislature, which seems to be explicitly politics-free zone. I'm very happy to see that. That's the Tuesday morning Legislative Prayer Fellowship, which is bipartisan, very just built around, you know, going into the Word and trying to build each other up as we go on do our service in the course of the week. Yeah. So that's also been a neat opportunity to get to know folks from across the aisle.
Senator Short, Representative Engel mentioned the A committee. You're the chair of the, or the chair.
I wish.
the ranking Republican on the Senate A committee. Do you find that that committee is a little bit more bipartisan, or is it also, you know, contentious at times?
I think at times it is contentious at times, but just really appreciate the members who are on there. We haven't had like really controversial bills yet. We may get a couple of those later. The other side would consider, I have a companion bill to Rep. Abels on the wolf issue, so they might consider that contentious. And then they've got one that would take away our sheriff's right, some of our sheriff's rights. I would consider that very contentious. So stay tuned. Mm. But by and large, it continues. Your relationships continue. Your education, talking about issues, continue. And so, you know, that's just part of the work that we do here.
This is Live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Okanagan Country Radio. If you have questions, you can email them to me, tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. That's tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. Or give us a call and we'll get those questions to the Senator and Representatives for you. The phone number is 509-826-0100, 509-826-0100, and we'll be right back.
Having low income can mean making tough choices, choosing between paying for food or medication, or a place to live is a reality for many people. Do you know someone who could use some extra help? Find out about the Supplemental Security Income Program, SSI, administered by Social Security. You could receive monthly SSI payments if your income and financial resources are low and you are 65 or older, or an adult or child with a disability or who is blind. SSI is money you can use to help pay for basic needs, like putting food on the table, keeping the lights on, paying the rent. It can mean new shoes for growing feet or help with medical needs. Call 1-800-772-1213 or visit ssa.gov/SSI to schedule an appointment or start to apply today. That's ssa.gov/SSI. This message produced by Social Security at U.S. taxpayer expense.
In school sports, it's easy to see the wins, the moments that make headlines. But there's so much work that goes unseen for any of it to happen. My name is Phil Risen, and I'm the executive director of the National Interscholastic Athletic Administrators Association. Throughout the country, athletic administrators dedicate countless hours to making life-changing opportunities possible for student athletes through sports. Their sacrifice is fueled by the belief that every student can grow and deserves their time to shine. On behalf of the NIAAA, we want to thank every athletic administrator for your tireless dedication to providing 7.8 million students across the country a path to a better future.
This message presented by the NIAAA, the National Interscholastic Athletic Administrators Association.
Aging well means staying healthy, active, and independent. To age well, we need to take care of our bones. 10 million Americans have osteoporosis, a hereditary disease that makes bones weak and more likely to break. Thankfully, we can all take simple steps to improve our bone health at any age. Eat a healthy diet that is rich in calcium and vitamin D. Get regular weight-bearing exercise, which means on our feet. Get bone health tips at pathtogoodbonehealth.org.
Welcome back from our live from Olympia. Welcome back to Olympia for Live from Olympia. How's that? With 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Okanagan Country Radio. I'm Trace Yellis with the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. Again, you can email me with your questions, tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov, tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov, or call 509-826-0100, 509-826-0100. Bill, coming to the, I want to, I guess, take just a moment to explain to people how the legislative process works. Not everybody got to see I'm Just a Bill on Schoolhouse Rock all those years ago, but that's how they were talking about Washington, D.C., but Olympia works very much the same, way. Members like Senator Short and Representatives Engel and Abell have an idea, or they hear from constituents and say, this needs to change, we need a law. So they write a bill. The bill then gets introduced and it gets assigned to a committee, and there are many different committees. You hear us talking about the committees. In committee, the bill is debated and it gives the legislators a chance to learn more about the bill, and then the committee votes on whether or not to send it on to the floor. There's one other step, rules, but we're not going to even get into that. So the bill leaves the committee, it's voted out of committee. If it's not voted out of committee, it dies. So you'll hear a lot of times, oh, that bill died. We reached a cutoff and the bill died. That's because it wasn't voted out of committee. Once it gets voted out of committee, it goes to the floor of either the Senate or the House. And if the Senate or House votes to support it, then the process starts all over again in the other chamber. So it goes through committee in the other chamber, either the House or the Senate. And if there are any changes made to the bill, then it has to kind of go through the process again. It comes back to the other chamber until everybody is agreed on one bill that says exactly the same thing, as in that bill, if it's voted out of each chamber, goes to the governor, who has the final say and can either veto it or cite him. So that's when we're talking about committees and that sort of thing in the floor, you'll kind of know what we're talking about. And so one bill in committee and the state government committee in the Senate is a bill that, Senator Short, you fear it would just gut the initiative process.
Oh, it would. This bill is being heard tomorrow, and it would absolutely not allow paid signature gathering. It would also put onerous requirements on those individuals gathering signatures. They would have to affirm by affidavit, which is a lot higher bar, that the information people are providing them is true and correct. Last time I checked, that was the job of auditors and the Secretary of State to determine whether or not that information is correct. It really moves in the direction of really getting in the way of even being able to collect signatures on initiatives. There's other points to it. There's penalties. We're going to hear the bill tomorrow. And the committee chair wants to exec it out on Friday. So it's like, wow, way to give some time to really look at this. But look, the Washingtonians were incredibly successful last year in signature gathering on the initiatives that came to us, as well as supporting natural gas. And the Democrats didn't like it one bit. It really put them in a corner last year. For most of the session, they were trying to figure out how they were even going to handle them. And it really changed the dynamics in this place, which from a minority perspective isn't easy. And I think they absolutely do not want that to happen again. And this is a bill that completely undermines that process. And folks, I might want to remind everybody that this is constitutional, you know, the right to initiative, the right to people's initiative. And for them to do what they're doing is just a slap in the face to all of the hard work that Washingtonians across the state have done to support these measures and to get them, you know, to our elections. So we'll see how it goes. We're what I call, my favorite phrase is loaded for bear. And we will see how this goes. But I imagine it's going to be quite interesting.
We should do one other clarifiers. When Senator Short says the bill's going to be execed out, that's that process in the committee.
Oh, voting out.
Where it gets voted on. So that's what that means.
Thank you so much.
And again, people may not understand the initiative process in our state, so I just want to explain that too. People can gather, if they gather enough signatures, they could get an initiative either in front of the legislature or on a ballot for voters to vote on. And that's the process that Senator Short fears is under attack in the Senate.
Well, and if I could just remind listeners of that effort last year, it was about supporting public safety and our law enforcement officers. It was about ensuring there would be no income tax in the state of Washington. It would also would have given choice and option on the state's long-term care plan of whether or not you opted in or not. And then obviously it dealt with the Climate Commitment Act and the increased prices that everyone has felt across the state when you fuel up at the gas stations. So along with the natural gas. By the way, the natural gas one was historic because there was such a limited time that they could actually even gather those signatures. Folks, those things have had, even though I get that we were not successful on three of those, oh, and then the parents' rights initiative as well. You made a difference. You made an incredible difference, and this bill threatens that in the future.
Have you seen any attacks on the initiative process in the House yet so far, representatives? Or is this just, this seems like something that it happens in the Senate every year. Doesn't it, Senator Short? I mean, that we see some sort of challenge to the initiative process.
It does. This is the most blatant by far.
Yeah. I haven't seen anything yet, at least in my committees.
Yeah, nothing in my committees yet either. I think it's likely that the first I would see it would be out there on the floor if it makes it to the floor. But I think Senator Short really hit the nail on the head. I don't think we can lose the forest for the trees on this one. It's no shock that they would be advancing something like this in light of the significant success with the initiatives over the last year or so. The other side didn't like it one bit, and I'm so glad Senator Short reiterated that point, that this is constitutional in nature. This is the most direct way for individual voters to have a voice in Olympia is through the initiative process. And so it's something we're going to be fighting very strongly if it makes it to the floor.
Another way to have a voice in Olympia is to come to Olympia and visit with your lawmakers. And people have been doing that. I know it's hard for people in your district to get all the way over here. I've been to your district, and I know how hard it is. I mean, it's a long ways off. And by the way, I think, Senator, haven't you told me that geographically, is it the largest district?
It is.
In the state?
We're 20% of the land mass of Washington State in the 7th Legislative District.
I drove from one side of the district to the other side of the district, and it took me a couple days to get through it all when I first got here. But anyway, but people have been coming and visiting.
Yes, they have. It's been fantastic. This last week particularly, we saw a lot of people from districts, including from Okanagan County. It was great to see the Okanagan County Assessor, Larry Gilman, and then the realtors came in one day, and Rocky Devon from Oroville was there. Your prosecutor, Albert Lynn, and Teddy Chow and Tegan Levine were in, and we talked about issues pertaining to law enforcement and prosecutions. And it was just, it's really encouraging when people make it out. It's a long ways to get here. I know it's 6.5 hours from my house, and some parts of the West District might be a little closer, and some places are farther yet. So, yeah, if anybody's headed this way, make sure you let us know. We'd like to meet with you and show you around if we have time.
Yeah, it's really meaningful if people are able to come all the way out here. If they're here to speak on something that's really of importance to them, we want to hear it. We also just want to take the opportunity to thank you for coming out in person and make sure that your trip is worthwhile. You know, there's the practical reality that if somebody's coming from Medellin Falls out here to Olympia, it's a much heavier lift than if somebody's, you know, traveling from, Redmond to come down here. Redmond's a fine town, but it's just a lot closer than Medellin Falls.
And to be honest with you, it's just nice to see people from home, too. You know, I mean, it's just, you're the only three, really, I mean, from from the district. And you know, I know you meet with each other often, but, you know, it's nice to see people from home. It's just makes you feel good, you know?
It does, yep.
I know that sometimes you forget that your legislators are people, too, but they very much are. They have families, and they have, you know, their normal These are citizen legislators. It's so important to emphasize that. This is not a full-time job for any of these legislators.
You might want to correct that.
They call it a part-time job, every member here is a member of the community as well. Moving forward, what are some of the things that, as you know, we start to spend more time on the floor? Another thing we should let folks know is that this first part of legislative session is a lot of committee time. Bills and committees. You've heard the representatives will say a couple times, yeah, it's not on my committee. Well, right now they're kind of focused on what's happening in their committees right now. But, you know, in the Senate, obviously we mentioned Wednesday and Friday, we're going to start seeing some bills on the floor. Are senators and representatives going to start voting on bills now here pretty soon?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, Wednesday will be the first time that we actually start voting on, you know, legislation.
Well, we actually started voting last week. We had a handful of bills that were voted off the floor. And so, yeah, there will be more of that. And we had one of our new Republican members actually pass his first bill, and that's the first time I've seen, you know, that. I don't know if that's normal, but there was a congratulations, and everybody jumped up out of their chairs and went and shook his hand, and it was kind of an exciting little moment.
Yeah, that's quite the process. You know, when it happens, hopefully it happens soon for both of you. It is always fun. The legislative session, this is what's called a long legislative session. And the reason why it's a long session is because they develop in these odd numbered years, they develop budgets, the 2-year budget. And that is a big process. And really, it's hard to talk about the legislature this year and not talk about that budget process a little bit, even if the three of you aren't working on it directly. But that is, I think right now what's happening is in committee is just senators, representatives are just kind of going through this thing and seeing what's in front of them, what the expenses are, because people are talking about anywhere from a 7 to, you know, I've heard as high as $13 billion budget shortfall. Got to figure out a way to fix that. Got to figure, because in the state of Washington, it's not like the federal government. Our budget has to be balanced by the end of this session. So how's that going so far?
Well, at least so far to me, it seems like it's a bit of the elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about, at least on the House side. We've built this budget that's not sustainable. I think it reflects some pretty serious fiscal irresponsibility over the last couple of years, but here we are. And there was some interesting surprises in the governor's inaugural address where, you know, he said that he will not sign a budget that continues that trajectory. And so I know Republicans have committed to being value-added and constructive and looking at where we can find savings in our existing budget. We're not going to be supportive of raising taxes. And that's been a clear line that I know our caucus has put out. And so really a lot of the discussions, I think, are taking place between the majority Democrats and the governor figuring out where are they going to go from here. But it was at least encouraging that the governor's starting point was looking at savings in the budget before trying to, you know, push the button raising taxes.
When we were doing the same thing in the Senate, I was actually really grateful, got to sit in on a part of the budget discussions on the natural resource budgets. Ecology is quite large. If I had the stroke of a pen, that agency would be changed a lot. But it just shows you that they're going through the work. But I want to let folks know a little interesting thing that's happened in our committees. As you know, if bills have over a certain cost over the 4-year budget outlook, then generally it's going to go to the budget committee, you know, an extra step. Well, we've been given direction from the chair of that budget committee in the Senate that the policy committees shouldn't consider passing out bills that have a larger than a certain cost over that 4 years. What's interesting, and I get it, you know, any bill that's passed and has a cost is obviously going to add to what's already going on with the budget shortfall. So I find it interesting, but then I look at bills and go, huh, I wonder if they're going to do the same thing when there's extra cost passed on to our local governments, or if there's extra cost passed on to our businesses. And so stay tuned to see how all that goes. I think we already know the answer to that. And look, I think we should be careful. at the state level, we should really look at these proposals and do they grow government? Do they, you know, do they regulate? Do they think, do things that are going to not only cost the state, but our citizens here in Washington? And it's just going to be really interesting to see it play out. I kind of think I know that they won't think too much about, you know, costing local governments, prosecutors' offices and the like. It just shows where the priorities are at, I guess.
Yeah, that's a big problem for local governments. And it's not just, you know, local governments run by Republicans, but local governments run by Democrats, too. I mean, these, what they're kind of known as unfunded mandates. You know, it's like, okay, here's this great new bill. There may be some cost to it. Figure out how you're going to pay for that, you know, local government. You know, local government's like, yeah, you know, listen, we have the same issues that you do. I mean, we're all trying to balance a budget with limited resources as well. I mean, I'm sure you hear from your local governments all the time that say, hey, listen, we can't really afford a bunch of new expenses. I mean, they're trying to figure out, you mentioned prosecutors, they're trying to figure out how to hire enough prosecutors and public defenders, you know, so you could actually have court proceedings right now. You know, it's like, I'm sure that's one of the things you hear the most from your local governments, I would imagine.
Well, I certainly hear about it quite a bit, and especially in the context of what you just described, the issue with public defenders and prosecutors. So you may or may not know that there's a proposal in front of our state Supreme Court to change the number of cases that our public defenders can take on. And the proposal that's been given is one that is just incredibly unworkable for the local counties and their budgets. And even if they were workable, even if the money magically existed, there's not the attorneys out there to fill those numbers. So there's multiple pieces to this issue, but one of them is exactly what you described, just this sort of mandate that's pressed down from Olympia, frankly, whether it's from the legislative or the judicial, then the counties are left holding the bag.
I think the challenge is exactly that. It's this, we're constantly putting more mandates, requirements, regulations that drive up costs without providing people or governments the ability to deal with those costs. And it's really crippling our especially our small businesses, our small governments. Yes, it does impact the Democrat-controlled small cities and counties, but the reality is that most of the Democrat-controlled small cities and counties have a lot higher tax base than the Republican ones do. So it makes it a lot harder for our rural areas to survive this when you have a large amount of government land. They can't just increase tax revenue from those. They don't have any control over it. You know, we're seeing all these proposals, even on the small businesses, like the dairy bill that would require dairies to track and pay for their methane emissions from their cows.
Oh, yes. This has been given a lot of creative names. I call it the gassy cow bill, but cow flagellants, we've heard it all. But yes, that's a very good example.
And as I read that bill, it exempts smaller beef producers. It really only applies to your feedlots. But on the dairy side, it looks like it covers all dairies. And I know in our district, we have a lot of these small state-licensed raw milk dairies where they might have, you know, 1 to 10 cows. And if they had to, I don't even know how they're going to track how much or even figure out how much methane their cows are producing. And as far as the commercial larger-scale dairies, you know, 1 to 300 cows, we don't have near as many left. I know I worked on a couple of them when I was a kid. One of them's out of business. One of them's still there. But these aren't things these dairies can't just raise their prices. Their option is to cut their profits or leave the state, which a lot of them are just going to leave.
Dairies are a good example of what regulation could do. I lived in Whatcom County before I came here. There used to be tons of dairies there. There are hardly any now. And a lot of that has to do with, I mean, yes, prices are a big part of it as well. I mean, it's a very difficult business to be in. But, you know, regulations and wages are two things that really hammer dairies. And so, you know, as these minimum wages go up, as there are more and more regulations, dairies have a ton of regulations they have to deal with, how they deal with waste and that sort of thing. They just end up going out of business. I mean, they're kind of like the canary in the coal mine in a sense, right?
Well, they do. It's the regulations certainly have a role in that as they struggle to, you know, figure out a path forward. There's also the generational piece of how these long-term operations continue forward. And if we make it so difficult for the next generation to be able to have a, whether it's a dairy or a cattle operation or, you know, a farm, if we make it so difficult for them to run those operations in a way that puts aside some money for retirement and puts away some, you know, money for the kids if they're going to go on to college or do whatever, then the next generation will just do something else.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of these, family entities continue because they're the family business. People care about them passionately. We see that a lot out in our neck of the woods.
I mean, you look in the mirror, right?
Right, yeah.
That's exactly what you have. Yeah, I mean, you're part owner of the family ranch.
And, right? And every generation has to make that commitment and that decision. Is it going to work? Is it going to work for them? But let's not make it harder, you know, for them to keep that operation going. I'd like to see it to be made a lot easier.
Yeah, it highly benefits society, doesn't it? I mean, to have families continue on with these businesses, I would imagine.
Well, sometimes people forget these businesses are often small businesses,
right?
You know, that are employing other people as well. And so, and they produce things, you know, that you just said that there's unfortunately not nearly as many dairies as there used to be up in Whatcom County. That's sad, right? You know, we see that in the Seventh as well. And, you know, we want a state that has things like dairies and cattle operations and farms. And that's, you know, because we need to be able to grow things. We need to be able to feed our own people.
Yeah. Land use is another thing. It's just very difficult. It's not a one-size-fits-all, like the Growth Management Act. You know, Senator Schor, I know you're constantly working on making that better for rural communities like the communities you represent.
Well, we're certainly trying. And I will say I had a meeting last week because of a rule that Commerce was promulgating where they didn't, I questioned whether or not they were accurate on the two bills that I passed. Like, the rules were not reflective of that. And I had a meeting with them. And I'm like, hey, you know, builders are stepping up. These were about kind of being able to, you know, to massage those boundaries, those urban growth boundaries, kind of through a no net loss approach. Or if there, you know, was critical area that was in an urban growth area, it would never be built out, you know, kind of doing that land swap. And Commerce isn't even getting the rules right. So here we've had incredibly supported, albeit small, but hopefully giving, you know, flexible tools. And I met with them last week and I'm like, what's going on here? You know that the two bills were different to do different things. So it, you know, we can pass really good bills and then it's always up to the agency to, you know, to do rulemaking. And so that's why I met with them. I'm like, and I provided my own comments as well to let them know that they did not get this right. So we'll see how the final rules are, but it's really, again, it's about offering tools so there can be, you know, better growth, still protecting, obviously, the lands we know we need to protect and frankly, protect our way of life as well. But it's just, you know, we need housing. We know that we have companies in our district that would add jobs, you know, to existing industries, but there's no housing for them. So stay tuned on that.
As I continue my little civics lesson here, I will mention also, yes, that's a very good point, that after that bill gets passed, after the governor signs it, then, you know, the agencies, think Department of Ecology, for example, that's a big one, they take that bill and they have to figure out a way to implement it, right? So they have to write rules, and and that's a whole other process.
It is a whole other process.
And really, I mean, it'd be easy for a legislature just to kind of wipe their hands and say, oh, bill passed, you know, forget about it. But you kind of have to stay on it, don't you?
You really do.
Make sure it keeps on, and, you know, Representative Abel, I know that you haven't had the chance to do that yet, but it's just kind of this ongoing process to make sure that the bill's doing what you intended it to do.
Well, and sometimes you don't get the first bill right. Like you make a good faith attempt and you need to, you know, you need to change it up a little bit. Yeah, tweak it. But I think the biggest part of our job that always goes unnoticed, and it goes beyond legislative session, is oversight and making sure that agencies are accountable. And I will tell you, that is the largest job of what we do. And it's one that really gets the least amount of attention, too. So it's just something I take very seriously. I know my colleagues do, too. You know, just to make sure that these agencies, there's follow through.
Yeah, the agencies are really under the directive of the governor, the executive, but the legislative branch does need to also keep an eye on it, right?
Absolutely, 100%.
All right, well, that's going to do it for us today. I want to invite you to come back next Monday at the same time. We're on at 8 o'clock. The show runs until 9 o'clock. It's called Live from Olympia. Please reach out to your state senator, Shelley Short, and your representatives, Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell. You go to leg.wa.gov, leg.wa.gov, and you'll find ways there to connect with your legislators. I'm Tracy Ellis, and this is Live from Olympia on Okanagan Country Radio. Have a great day.